Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart. This week's episode, I'm not going to say all the stuff I normally say every week. I'm not going to do it. I will tell you this. Many years ago, as the Facebook world had developed and has grown in the way that it has and the way that barrel picks have grown, there was a guy in San Antonio that ran a bar that was doing a crazy amount of barrel picks. And eventually, those bottles ended up on shelves all across the state because that bar couldn't bring in the total amount of the barrel, which is normal. A bar restaurant will do a barrel pick. They can't move the whole thing, so it gets out to retail. And that's why you'll see things on shelves at Specs or mom-and-pop stores. There were all these barrels that said Christopher Ware on it. And the whole bourbon community on Facebook was like, who the is Christopher Ware? Who is this guy? And today is that story. Today we invite Christopher Ware on, who now works for Seersucker Gin. He's based out of San Antonio, so he drove in, flew in specifically for this and in this market. And my good friend Mike Selipek. Now, Mike... Mike works for NASA, and he's been on the show before, and I erroneously said that he's the second NASA guy. He's actually the third guy that works for NASA. NASA being the National Aeronautics Space Alliance, whatever the hell NASA means. You know what I'm talking about. The real NASA. Pasha was first. It was episode one. Steve Platts was like episode 10. Phenomenal guy. In charge of getting humans to Mars. I encourage you to go back and watch the Balcones episode with Steve Platts or the first episode with Pasha Morshetti. Mike works in the vehicle division for rovers, right? So stuff that ends up on space stations or on Mars that actually moves forward and gathers samples. We didn't talk a lot about it because we got kind of caught up on everything else, but Mike's a good friend of mine. He's been around a long time. He's in HBS. He's just a phenomenal guy. And so we had him back on the show today to talk about our upcoming barrel picks of Copper and Kings, the Armagnac barrel that we just recently did, and of course, these fantastic gins from Seersucker. I will say this. For those of you listening thinking, oh, God, another gin episode, I will say this. And I talk about this at length in this episode. It drives me friggin' nuts how people say, I only drink bourbon or I only drink scotch or I don't branch out of my comfort zone or blah, 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 blah. Stop it. Stop it. Drink. There's a reason why spirits, every category, has been around for hundreds of years. It's because it's worth visiting. It's worth acclimating to. It's worth finding an appreciation of. And there are so many great spirits out there, even those that are not in a barrel, that deserve your attention, except for vodka. Vodka can die. But I will say this. This particular vodka from Seersucker is hilarious. I love the idea. I think it's fantastic. Gin being the original flavored vodka, I have an appreciation for. So, the Whiskey Social, definitely www.houstonwhiskeysocial.com. Tickets are on sale. Tickets are going well. The rodeo is coming, so get your tickets while you can. Our shirts and glassware for this show are available at mywhiskeyneat.com. Please rate and review on Chartable, or sorry, on iTunes and all your other podcast platforms, which, by the way, I didn't tell you this, but I got a notification that we have ended up on some charts. This podcast ended up on some charts. You want to know what those charts are? We are now currently ranked number 264 in Poland, of all places. Not America. In Poland. for social culture something or other. So thank you for my Poland listeners. And I actually pulled it up and looked on our analytics. We have a 4.9% Poland audience, which is bullshit? Oh, holy shit. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You got to censor out that. Yeah. Thank you to my Poland listeners. Like, this, that's amazing. I didn't even know that was possible. So, this has been fun. We're working on some upcoming sponsors that will allow us to go mobile. And that's my goal, is I'd like to go to cigar lounges and travel and interview these people that are fascinating, spirited conversations with interesting people. And thank you for your support. I really appreciate it. So I'm not going to say without further ado, but without proceeding further, Mike Salopek from NASA and Christopher Ware from Seersucker Gin. Cheers. Chris.
Yes.
Thanks for being here, man.
Thank you so much for having
me. Dude, I'm excited to have you. One, because I don't know what I expected you to look like. We're Facebook friends. But you have a much more seasoned, great hair look to you than I expected. I expected a...
I'm the supplier version of Michael McDonald.
Sure. I kind of expected something like Mike, right? So Mike has got this youthful look to him that's just... classic early in your career ambassador look.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You have a seasonedness to you that's it's good. It looks good on you. You've got
that's life just beating you down, but not taking any punches.
All the gray's good, right? So as long as you can keep your hair, I would love gray hair. As long as there's hair involved, I'm losing it. So.
I'm not gonna lose any of it. I think it's just gonna keep going this way.
It's like a Clooney thing. You got kind of a Clooney thing happening. Well, a seasoned Clooney, Brad Pittish.
I will take that. And if I can Brandon take $700 billion, I'll take that as well.
I'm with you 100%. So I actually brought quite a few things here. I know you're the brand rep of Seersucker Gin. Have we talked Gin on the show yet?
I don't think so.
I don't know. We might have talked Gin on the show. By the way, Jack, can you get the timer going? We might have talked Jay on the show. I'm almost positive we have, but I wanted you on for a couple reasons. So we met online because of one particular thing that you did early in your career. So everyone knows that in the bourbon world, the barrel pick is the gem, right? With allocations happening right now with Pappy and this and that, it's unless you're spending a shit ton of money in with a store, you're unfortunately, it's a battle to get the allocated stuff. So the goal, the hope in life, is a really good barrel pick. Mm-hmm. And before barrel picks became all the rage in Houston, there were all of these barrel bottles floating around from Wild Turkey.
Yeah.
With your name on it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't Christopher Ware for this place or Christopher Ware. It was just specially selected by Chris Ware. Mm-hmm. And everybody was like, what in the hell is this about? Who is this guy? No one's ever heard of him. What's going on?
Everyone liked it.
Well,
I feel like I missed out on something.
I remember specifically Jarrett Liddell. We've got like this group chat with Jarrett Liddell and Jay Friedman and Evan Staber with the Bourbon Hounds. And they weren't the first people to send it to me, but they were the most memorable conversation I had on you was before we met was this conversation. And Jarrett had reached out to you, I think, independently and was like, hey, what's up with these?
Yeah.
And tell us the backstory on that.
Well, at the time
let's pour something first.
Hey, I like that.
So
I just want to interject.
Okay.
So the Facebook page, just that alone, thank you for moderating that. That is a feat.
Oh, are you in HPS?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. It's a bit of a nightmare.
The stuff you put up with on that show. Yeah, so if anyone's listening at home, you're all going to hell.
I still contest it's for the greater good.
Oh, my God.
Like the effect that it has on the industry is overwhelming. But an endeavor of love. It's like being married where there's a labor of love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's start with this. So this is our Space Cowboy Armagnac. Armagnac, as you know, is a really slow moving category for most people, but the bourbon world is in love with L'Encantada, and this is our 18-year-old Armagnac from La Fraiche. We did this, and I actually finally heard my first negative feedback about it was from Gabriel. Yeah, he wasn't into it, but he's also an Armagnac drinker.
Okay,
grape whiskey is a different beast altogether, but it's very similar in a lot of ways.
I've been seeing this like pop up all down the feed, and it's definitely piqued my interest because at one point my last bar that I had, one of the sections was entirely a brandy focused venture.
Oh, cool. Sure.
And we had about 400 SKUs of just different Armagnacs and brandy.
That's incredible.
That was a number of years ago too, right?
Mm-hmm. That was that was back in 2015.
Wow. Okay.
And what was the name of the place?
It was called Paramore. Okay, I almost don't put it on my resume anymore. Sure. Just to how it's been.
It went downhill. Changed. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, it hasn't. It's just different.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just different. Different ethos, different way of approaching it, different way like the cocktail program went. And so.
Well, I we've talked about this on the show too. There's this thing that happens in the whiskey or in the bar world where you can have a passion and a focus or an idea for a bar. But then mm-hmm. when you start the bar, you do have this conflict of we can make so much more money doing it this way.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of lose that niche audience that a lot of bars have maintained. And I say a lot. There's really not that many overall. Relatively speaking, most bars, respectfully, are shit.
Yes.
So a lot of – I remember in particular, there's this great guy locally. He actually lives down the street from me, and I'm blanking on his name right now, but he handled the bar program for Cullen's here in Houston.
Okay.
He's very well known. And for some reason, I know him. He dated my sister-in-law too. please forgive me. He handled Cullen's bar program and opened a new concept in Seabrook, the Volcano Room.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And the goal was a similar thing to do like what Lalo is, like a great rums, great whiskey. And the passion behind that was there, but then when you open the bar, you're like, we can make so much money on shots of vodka or this or whatever. And so the concept didn't maintain its original vision.
Yeah. My wife and I, we used to go there a lot when they first opened because it was great to have like a little tiki bar. And then it kind of, when they started shifting concepts, and then of course, like with Rosewater opening up, we were like, well,
and see,
this is more like what we're looking for down here. So.
Rosewater stayed steadfast. Posh has done a great job.
Yeah.
They have caved in on a few things. Like they originally, when I first talked to him, early on, the rumor was that the bar wasn't going to carry any vodkas.
Mm.
But you have your regulars that come in, and they do enjoy this or enjoy that. But then
vodka pays the bills.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the end of the day.
Money.
So
I mean, if you're not serving vodka or Crown Royal from some part in a liquor store, if you're a retailer, you don't carry those in Texas, you're not making money.
Right.
That's just the Texas rule. Now, that's different in every demographic.
Especially in College Station.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, some people doing 100 cases of Tito's a week.
Yeah. Anywhere where, like, you know, people are talking about Cowboys, Crown Royal, Crown and Tito's, Royal. Pull out your dual pistols.
Even though it's that Canadian, the Canadian stuff.
Talk about marketing.
Yeah.
But I mean, being on this side, going from bar to brand and seeing how there's so much marketing in all these products. And I mean, I'm guilty of it as well with certain things I do, but I try to be as forthcoming as possible. Mm-hmm. I'm completely forthcoming. I'm like almost transparent where. We want people to – it's part of the joke. It's part of the allure. It's part mm-hmm. of the mystique that you're trying to build and get people to understand.
So
we jump back to like the barrels that we were talking about, mine was more when you have a money guy and you have and he's going for a certain aesthetic and I'm going for an aesthetic, the product wasn't being dumbed down at all. But it was like almost like an argument of like how he wanted like the cocktail service to dress a certain way.
Hmm.
And I agree with that too. But mm-hmm. then when you're arguing over something that finicky, the relationship is, past what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And so you step back, you have to reassess, and then you either can fix the relationship or you move on. And that's the way of how it kind of ended up happening. And I think, the money speaks for itself where it goes, went from doing $300,000 a month to where it is now.
Sure.
That kind of is
so. So going back to what you were essentially head of the cocktail program, and your goal, you had a specific goal in mind with these whiskeys.
Yeah, and they were all very supportive about that because it was extremely unique in the fact that everyone has barrels and they want to do barrel cocktails and things like that, and everyone's doing barrel choices. It's first coming out. When I was the whiskey guardian, as they called us, for Angel's Envy, when that whiskey first launched in 2011, I was actually the first one for Texas.
Hmm.
And the barrels came about a year, 2 years after that, where they wanted to pick your barrel, choose your expression.
They did away with that program too.
They did.
Yeah, I remember very much liking the one that NASA did.
Yeah, that one was really good.
And I was very saddened to see Angels Envy to stop doing that program. But, you know, I think sometimes these brands kind of they get in before their time, and they will try something and do away with something before it's ready.
Yeah.
And then now if they were to do it, I think it would be a very well received compared to the way it was 3 years ago.
I think
they'll
come back. I mean, Wes with Angels Envy, I mean, he pretty much has that. He understands what his dad wanted, and he's, you know, he's a product of his dad, and his sons are now there in the distillery, and they know what's really going on. They understand about, you know, juice allocations and then all these different aspects where people want to buy their own whiskey and then resell it. And
sure.
They're tied into the community.
Right.
They will – Bacardi, I think, with them being purchased by Bacardi, they had to take a step back as well and look at what was making money, what was making fiscal sense, and I believe they will bring it back. But it'll just be a little bit of time.
Yeah. I think it'll go up in price, too.
Oh, it definitely will.
If you notice, they just released that sherry cask, which I'm a fan. I've always been a fan of Angels Envy. I've given them constructive feedback about their cask strength offering. The jump in price from their standard offering to cask strength offering is so exorbitant.
It's huge.
That's my only feedback. The product itself, I've enjoyed. I have no problem, and I really loved NASA's barrel pick. Their private blend, little micro batch blend.
Their blend was cool. There was a blend by, I can't remember the bar group in Dallas, and it was just spectacular.
Hmm. Yeah.
It was very, very, very good.
Well, I didn't know that you were in HBS. I mean, I knew that you were based in San Antonio.
I'm like the creepy silent partner. That like looking in voyeur.
A lot of brands are.
Yeah.
You don't want to get into arguments. You don't want to. You know what I've noticed? There's two types of brand ambassadors. There's people who started off not in the industry or in a role in the industry to which you can be an enthusiast and you can chime in and say stuff and not worry about your job. And then when you transition into like an ambassador role, it doesn't inhibit your behavior. Like Nicholas Talamantes.
Yeah.
I love Nick, but Nick as a distributor. Joined the group as a fan, and so he could get into the banter and the arguing or the disagreements or whatever. And then when he became the head of Four Roses for Houston, he's like, "No, I'm still Dick. I'm gonna do me." Like there was no. Whereas other people, when they join the group and they're already an ambassador, a lot of them do what you do and kind of lurk and kind of watch and just kind of see the impact and see some of the negative.
If I sold whiskey, I think I'd be much more involved and I would have to chime in on a lot of people as well.
Yeah,
but I'm also like, I'm the supplier that goes in and I'll go and pitch myself to bars and restaurants. A restaurant can almost like drop their steak in front of me and I would sit there. Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, that's great. Thank you. How about the menu placement?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's looking at it from like two different angles, but on a podcast, yeah, it's full open. Like when I did like Mike G's, we just talked about everything.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
No hold bars.
Huge Mike G fan.
Yeah, he's fun.
So I've talked about Mike G several times on the show, and I don't know when his podcast started, but he's like at episode 260 or something. Some crazy amount. And he is, I think he's the ideal consumer. I don't know what his background is job wise. But he drinks everything. He's got a huge fascination with mezcal, but other spirits. So like where we are, we do have our lanes that we love, but he likes to branch out of his comfort zone. Yeah, which is, I think, is the where everyone should strive to be. If you're listening to this, if you take any merit in anything I say, strive to be versatile in spirits. There are so many fantastic things out there, especially sitting on this table. I'm excited to try through a few things.
I mean, just look at it like, you know, when I first started drinking whiskey, I was like, what is this crap, right? Like it burned. You're taking a shot of Jack or Jim Beam at like in college or whatever, and you didn't like it. I avoided spirits for a long time. And then as I got older, beer started to disagree with me if I had more than a couple. And
filling too.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, my wife and I started going out to cocktail bars and trying different things. And then, you know, you start with a sweeter drink. And then you maybe move toward more spirit forward. And then pretty soon you're just like, yeah, just give me the whiskey in the glass. It's fine. And then.
I mean, I'm with you 100%. It bothers me how, like, even with food, when someone says they don't eat tomatoes, it kind of makes me goddamn furious that an adult can be picky. You can say goddamn on the radio, right?
Nope. You can say damn.
Not. Yeah. Did you see my note about butthole?
Yes.
Yeah.
But you said lower G, God. That's fine.
Say it again.
You said lower G God. And so that's fine.
Oh, yeah.
In
yeah.
Texas, lower G
God. Oh, yeah, they'll censor God, but not damn. Right. That's what'll happen on the radio, yeah. Which is
my
so
wife's gonna punch me in the face for
stupid,
this.
Bizarre. Why being on here and me saying that?
No, me saying it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh.
I
say it. Oh.
The it's just yeah, I put the note on Facebook about I did a real ESPN show mm-hmm. last week and I found out I couldn't say butthole on camera or on radio. I can call you a butthole, but I can't refer to my own. It's just so crazy. Yeah. But
I just learned about a Richard pick.
Yeah, that's right.
That was amazing.
That was awesome.
What do you mean?
A Richard pick.
Richard pick.
Yeah.
Tricky dick.
Yeah, yeah. I'm following you.
Yeah.
But is it a barrel pick called? No. Are you just saying?
Oh my God,
just,
that would be a great barrel
you
pick.
You said you've just
that
heard,
would be an awesome.
So I'm having a hard time believing that you're just now discovering.
Richard pick.
Yeah.
The term
the Richard
specific
pick.
Term Richard pick.
Yeah, but
we're not talking about the like, actual
the act of.
We know that.
Yeah. Okay, sure.
That's out there.
I thought you were saying didn't know what.
No, so the ESPN guys out here when they're like trolling their consumers that are on their own Facebook page, they're like we're referring to that. Oh, this guy just sent us a Richard pick.
Yeah.
And we're all like, what's that?
That's how you can say it on the radio.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
Well, if anyone knows, I am 37, and this is why.
Well,
that's,
today I learned.
Today I learned.
That's what's so fascinating about the show is before every break, Fred and AJ mention their phone number. Text in, call in, say something to us. And it's like a cell phone. How are you not just constantly getting the worst photos that are on the internet?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Like if I was a troll, and there's a lot
I
of
would
rush
ideas, oh, yeah. bought that.
I would be – can we – at our next break, I'm going to find out what Fred and AJ's phone number is. I'm going to give it to you. Please send the worst photos you find on the internet.
Oh, no.
Now their show is from, what, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m.?
Oh, no. This is
4
great.
To 7. 4 to 7 p.m. Okay, so.
What have you done, you monster?
A call to action.
This is great. And your best memes. I want your memes.
No. Just your worst things you can find on the internet. I'm talking.
You just get to burn those photos.
Birthing photos or just whatever you can find. They're great guys, but they've trolled me enough that I would love to inspire just a scotch of trolling on their phone line while they're on air. Okay, so I just got the phone number. The phone number for ESPN is 713-780-73776. 713-780-ESPN. Please send your most heartfelt photos of the worst things you can find on the internet to Fred and AJ. Tell them it's from Whiskey Neat and your friend Christopher Hart, and we'll go from there. This is going to be amazing, and I'm super excited about it. Anyways, have you tried the Armagnac?
Yeah, we were just the number we were talking about. We were doing our entire flavor wheel
that
you get
wheel.
From the CSS.
Mm. Yeah.
And it now just hit me how much that has changed in the decade it's been out.
The flavor wheel?
No, the CSS. Like how people like throw it out there, like a certified specialist experience.
They use
people have like a WSET
or
the sommelier courses, all that fun stuff. And the people that throw that out to you, like mm-hmm. trying to say, oh, this is my
I've seen it on a lot right. of business cards.
Oh, yeah.
Are you
and
serious?
It always gives me a stroke.
The
every
CSS,
time.
Comma, yeah. dot, CSW, dot, WSET2, dot.
Wow. Sure.
I mean, might as well. You know, just make
first,
it whatever you want.
Alphabet soup afterwards. Yeah.
The first Cicerone. Time. That's what I was about to say. The first time I heard the word Cicerone, I wanted a.
Cicerone?
It's a beer.
Sommelier.
Sommelier.
This is like social media influencer, like a obnoxious.
Super obnoxious, right? So the term, but there's different levels of Cicerone, and we were working on a beer.
I hate that word already.
Right. So we were working
there's
on
There's three
a,
levels.
On a beer design for our upcoming beer release, and I approached a comedy group that I admin on Facebook. There's this girl out of California and she's like, oh, I love beer. I was like, oh, great. She's like, I'm a Cicerone level 2 or something. And I thought, oh yeah, cool. And then I was like Googling what's Cicerone. I'm like, oh, it's a beer thing. Mm-hmm. It's a, all right.
Wow. She threw that out there. So she took the online exam. That's Cicerone 1.
Okay.
And then she took this, I think it's 60 minutes or 60 questions. I forget. I haven't looked at it in 4 years.
God.
Now, the highest level, I mean, it is difficult, and I understand all of the nuances that go into it and learning the different hops, the different malts, mm-hmm. the different ways of
– This is as gross as the guy in your office who always gives women shoulder massages.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's how gross that is.
He's a high school teacher doing the shoulder massage.
Yeah, just like, hey, how you doing? But it's always to girls, and it's always some shaved head, bald guy that – you know, I work with a guy that his last name is Boehner, which is spelled awfully close to something else that he
yeah
and, yes. and he's always touching women on the shoulders.
Why am I envisioning Ted Bundy right now? Maybe because that's all everyone's talking
about.
Ted Bundy was attractive, right? I think he was a good-looking guy.
No, my wife keeps saying that. She's like, Ted Bundy was hot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
like, Netflix special.
What are you saying? You want me to get a Volkswagen? Yeah, yeah. Drive around?
You want me to murder your dead body?
Yeah, come on. Yeah. What's your safe word? Don't kill me.
What do you think of the Armagnac? I'm pleasantly
surprised.
It's
really good.
The cash strength, you know, no added color, no added anything, just give you a raw product straight from the barrel is definitely my idea of good Armagnac. And I hope that we continue to jump down this rabbit hole because 18-year-old bourbon now.
Oh, my goodness.
250, yeah. $300. 18-year-old cash strength Armagnac.
$60.
Well, in this case, it's $175, but we have talked to both the supplier and mm-hmm. found an alternate importer if necessary. They don't have an exclusionary contract with PM. Although Nicholas Palazzi is great, I'd rather go through them, but I'm trying to find ways to get that cost down to closer to $120.
Yeah.
And if we did, we could do 3-4 barrels of this a year. Yeah. Like, we could just pump these freaking Armagnac barrels out left and right. It's an expensive thing to import spirits. So,
yeah, I have a couple of, birth year Armagnacs from 85, and they were like $120.
And
right?
See,
and for like, 30, yeah. for, I mean, uh-huh. you can't find anything 30 years old for anywhere near that price.
Certain liquor stores, and that's the thing, like everyone in the secondary market's going out there and trying to pilfer all the whiskey and stuff. Whiskey. Yeah. And they're leaving all these gems of Armagnacs behind.
God.
You can pick up a 1940 Armagnac. Maybe
or old dusty tequila.
Oh, my
old
God.
Old dusty tequila is fantastic.
If anyone out there has an old dusty bottle of Chinaco, please hit me up. Like Chinaco, I'm talking about from the 80s. Chinaco.
Sure, sure.
That stuff. Or, I mean, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there, which is why I always tell you, strive to like all spirits. And I skimmed over this a little bit, but it drives me up the wall when an adult, like I work with a guy who doesn't drink coffee and doesn't drink alcohol, and he's like 40, and I'm like,
looks like a baby.
Yeah, dude, his wife, him and his wife are famous for being picky eaters.
Why am I imagining the couple from Christmas Vacation then right now?
Oh,
the next
yeah.
door?
I don't know, Margo.
So I remember one day she ordered a BLT and got back and flipped out. I mean, she was screaming. She was angry. I said, what's the matter? She goes, there's no burger on this.
What?
I said, you ordered a BLT. She's like, yeah, that means burger, lettuce, and tomato. I was like, no, it doesn't.
What?
It means bacon. Like they have such a limited experience as adults with
burger,
food and they don't drink alcohol and it's not a religious thing. They just don't like it. They don't think it tastes good. They don't like coffee. I'm like, I'm blocking you on Facebook. We can't be friends.
We can't be.
I don't understand what's happening right now. So, but look, let's get to Seersucker Gin. So, I have recently, over the past year and a half, jumped into the gin category.
We
got fancy glasses.
Yeah.
These were highly expensive. Now, this is vodka based.
That works. Thanks.
The vodka based gin thing. Where
compound gin.
Sweet.
I mean, if you look at it this way, like all gin itself is
pretty
really
much
the original flavored vodka. Yeah.
Sure. And that's what I said on Facebook recently. I caught some shit for it.
Oh, well, really? You know, people are always going to have an opinion.
Yeah.
They're speaking
the
truth.
Then that's when they should send us their cell phones and we can put it online.
Now, is this a mix between you talking about doxing people, like putting their stuff out there, personal info out there? A mix between stuff that's added at maceration process or gin basket versus added afterwards?
No, there's gin basket and there's different other ways of making it.
Sure.
This is going to be compound style. There's a lot of compound style gins on the market as well.
What is compounding again?
Compound style is like after the fact you're making your distillate
mm-hmm.
and you're making essentially vodka.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to send it over to blending. And then that's when you're going to add in your
maceration.
Okay, yeah, maceration.
Yeah, maceration. Yeah. And then they redistill it with the botanicals in the vodka.
You can either do that way or you can just add it in after the fact and blend it in.
When you say add what in exactly?
Like your juniper, your cardamom, your coriander, your orange.
The flavoring or the actual?
The flavor.
Okay. So you're blending in after the fact.
Mm-hmm. It's like a tea, like kind of like you're steeping tea, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
And there's the gin basket method as well.
Yeah, the gin basket method is also when you're distilling, you put it in the column itself as the distillate comes through the column. It's taking on the nuances of everything's there.
A lot of citrus.
Yeah, I was about to say, got a lot of citrus.
A lot of citrus.
It's actually why I brought this Macallan today. Shout out to Elise Blackman. The I'm really digging citrus notes on spirits lately. The bright, especially as we get towards the hotter months,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
This has got a lot of citrus in it.
So what this was, we actually created Southern Style. That was an entire method of doing it. And what it is, it's, you know, looked at by light juniper, citrus, and, you know, clove honey. So clove honey kind of acts as like the binding agent of everything. And as you smell it, it's actually going to go across your palate the same way. You're going to have orange and lemon up front, then it goes to clove honey.
This is actually pretty.
I almost get a little mint. Yeah,
juniper,
mint.
Cardamom, coriander. About 1 in 10 people, I think,
mint leaf
will have almost get anise. And it's like their palate tricking them. Kind of how some people think that cilantro tastes like soap.
Right.
Some people will actually think that they get anise off this, which I think is perfect because I like anise, but not everyone does. But it'll come back and kind of come across your palate. So it works very well for mixing. I almost think of it as like an amplifying style. Anything you mix it to is just going to amplify whatever you take it with.
So I'm always hesitant when I I don't mind being honest with whiskey brands, but I feel like I don't know enough about. I'd say I know quite a bit about rum, but even then, like ryes or gins, I can taste something and enjoy it, but I'm almost hesitant to say that I love it because I don't know what people like Pasha, who have this really experienced gin palate,
right,
what they would think.
You don't want to be judged.
Yeah. I mean, it's to me, this tastes fantastic. I could drink this straight. It's got kind of a citrusy lemonade note that is very apparent.
It's very, very drinkable.
It makes a great, you know, which is Hoffmannhaus martini. So with the 1890s style where it's
I will tell you, it kind of irritates
vermouth, orange bitters.
It irritates the crap out of me that just drinking something straight, a gin straight, is a martini. Like, you wouldn't call this a whiskey martini. It's just, or an Armagnac martini. No, it's just straight.
Now we're going to pull up the cocktail side of me where I just get real obnoxious.
Do it. Get mean
when
and
people
obnoxious.
Sit there and like call certain things cocktails, it's like, no, this is not a martini party. This is a cocktail party.
Right.
A martini has to have these three things.
Yep.
What's the three things for martini?
Chocolate, I mean, you have to have your spirit, your vermouth, and your bitters.
I didn't know that.
So,
when my sister makes...
Well, then also, four things, you have to have your ice as well.
Yeah, your cocktail. Water for dilution.
Yeah.
My sister-in-law makes a pickled martini where she uses pickle juice, and it's pickled, chilled gin, and that's it.
No vermouth or anything?
I didn't know vermouth was required. Yeah. I thought when you poured... This is how ignorant I am when it comes to martinis. I prefer my barrel-aged spirits, but I always thought
barrel-aged martini.
If you take a martini glass,
that barrel-aged rye gin.
And Copper and Kings makes a fantastic barrel-aged cask-strength gin. Speaking of Copper and Kings, I'm really excited to go back to these. So I always thought if you took a martini glass, chilled it, shake it with ice, whatever, poured in a glass, if that was a martini.
Never shake it.
No. I mean,
I didn't know vermouth was a required aspect of that.
Vermouth has to be a part of it. Vermouth has to be a part of it. I mean, it's commonly looked at where it's French dry vermouth. And then it's, you know, your gin and then your orange bitters.
Sure.
Add it to it, stir it straight up, twist, no olives.
As soon as you said orange bitters, as I'm tasting this, I'm getting a little orange.
I definitely get orange.
Citrus change from lemon to more orange notes.
It's going to like flip over right there. But look, anything you... Gonna add this to my one of my favorite cocktails with this is making an old fashioned with
it.
Ooh,
it's
a gin old
fashioned.
Yeah,
just a style of a cocktail.
Yep,
it's this Peychaud bitters and then a grapefruit twist.
Oh,
so
wow.
Grapefruit and Peychaud, grapefruit, amazing together.
Yep.
What's this normally run?
This right here, you can get it in specs for $19.99.
Wow.
That's one of the benefits of making a compound style. It's because compound styles. It's more affordable for us to make it. If we were doing something differently, if we were actually going through the gin basket method and all those other things, this would come out for maybe around like $29.99.
Sure.
And then we'd be with everyone else in the category of trying to, you know, go against the behemoths of the industry.
Sure.
And this way, people kind of go out, they can see it, they can understand it, they can buy it and take it home more readily than buying a $34.99 bottle of gin. Because everyone... is trying to buy the $34.99 bottles of whiskey, which is hard to
still find it.
I mean,
where's this at now?
Old Charter 12 year 5 years ago was you could still find for about $16 a bottle. Now that in itself is an entire rebrand mode.
God yeah. damn.
Get ready for that to come out for $185 next Christmas.
$185?
I'm just waiting for it. Yeah, I don't know if it's right. coming out.
That's probably what it'll be.
I'm waiting for Ancient Age.
It's like Boone County all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Ancient Age is going to get rebranded, and I can't wait for that.
You know what blows my mind? I'm going to speak freely for a minute. It blows my mind. So we did a Boone County barrel pick when we were in December. We went to the distillery under the pre-confirmed price of $100 to $120 a bottle for 12 to 14 year old bourbon.
Okay.
Cask strength.
MGP.
Yep, we're happy with it. Stuff. Right. So that's about right nowadays. And we get there, we taste, we find out our samples are all 14 years. God. Oh, that's awesome. 14 years. Like, well, also the prices have gone up. Why are you telling us now? By the way, that day it took us an hour and a half to travel.
Yeah.
Right? Took us an hour and a half to travel. Yeah. We sit through an hour and a half tour.
I changed my flight.
And then we find out it's going to be closer to 175. Now, at the time when we picked our barrel, he kept hinting that the price had changed, and it was making me nervous. Mm-hmm. So we picked our barrel. Then I stepped outside to call the distributor and say, hey, he keeps saying things that makes me think the price has gone up. If this gets too crazy, we're going to pass on it. He goes, don't worry about it. I'll make a phone call. There's this thing that happens in the industry that anytime a supplier raises their prices, a lot of distributors will have it worked into the agreement that if you decide to raise price, you have to let me get in one last order.
Mm. Yes.
So the distributor was like,
hence all those barrels you saw with me picking Wild Turkey and Russell's.
Yeah. So the distributor, like, if they're going to raise the price on this, then I can just threaten to buy everything they have.
Yeah.
At the, that this at lower that low price.
Mm-hmm.
And, we got confirmation that our price wasn't going to increase. And then something happened and we got confirmation. Our barrel of 14-year-old bourbon was going to be $180, $175. And at that time we just passed on it. And it even after all that, when we passed on it and announced that we were passing on it, there were still a handful of stores that were like, we still want it.
Sure.
Like, we'll take it. We'll take it at $200 a bottle.
Well, I think just recently didn't MGP announce that most of their older stocks are pretty much
gone. Yeah.
And I mean, Smooth Ambler's transitioning to getting their stuff from Tennessee.
From Dickel, yeah.
So it's like that stuff is basically gone from the world now almost. And I think, and it was very good. And, I mean, I listened to the episode you did with Evans, and he was talking about how it's like how lucky we were in
the time. In we don't area. Realize how much we,
right.
I had the same debate with Evans about, can we get another pour of a new gin? Cause this is actually very, very enjoyable.
Let's try something different. So now we're holding Seersucker Southern Style Lemonade. So this is a gin sour in a bottle.
Sure. So it's a pre-made cocktail basically.
Yeah. Pre-made cocktail. One thing that people look at this and they almost like to say, well, we never saw these before. And, you know, you're making flavored gin now, like people make flavored vodka. No. Gordon's was making this stuff back in the 1930s.
Well, Deep Eddy made it famous, right? Deep Eddy is killing it right now.
Yeah, and Deep Eddy's just going from a different method. This is not going to be as sweet as anything like that because you have, you know, the regular gin, you have clove honey in the botanical structure. That clove honey is already in, you know, the base gin of the lemonade or the gin sour cocktail. So it's going to have a hint of lavender to the back end. Mm, like this just needs like one modifying element to it, being icing or water, and you have a cocktail.
So I'll say this.
Mm-hmm.
I try to stick to barrel-aged spirits or clear spirits, specifically ones that have no sugar in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You go to Rosewater one night, you have five cocktails, the next day you're hungover.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I've always attributed dehydration and sugar content to be the reason why people get hungover. And this tastes delicious. I could find myself it's almost like a gimlet in a bottle.
Yep.
I could
you got your lime right there. That's basically what that is, right?
Yeah.
It's a Southside cocktail in a bottle. Yeah. This was actually made because of Harvey.
Really?
Uh-huh. So when Harvey hit, I was the secretary for USBG San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm on the National Charity Foundation for USBG. And I got 77, maybe 80 bars. I forget how many now. To take part on like Monday, I got all the chapter together saying, hey, let's do an event for Harvey.
Yeah.
You got to get people out, raise money now, get it into the right hands, because this is turning into a, you know, catastrophic disaster.
Sure.
So between like Monday to Wednesday, I got about 60 bars taken apart. Well, being a small brand, I started running out of money. And Shailene Lopez, at the time, she ran the state for Campari. You know, I knew her very well because I, you know, picked all these barrels from her. So nice. we have a great relationship, good friends. And so she came in, kind of subsidized us a little bit to help us over that final push and get some more bars involved with printing and getting menus out there. Well, like the caveat was that you either had to make a Southside cocktail, so gin, lime, sugar, mint. I mean, there is the argument that saying it should be lemon juice instead of lime juice, but that's nor here nor there, and not time for this show. We can take it up online in correct banter style and make everything rude.
Have a good old-fashioned Chris Morris argument.
Yeah, I was just about to I was about to invoke Chris Morris.
I've met him once. He's a really nice guy.
He's a nice guy. Online, he can be the worst. He can I love him genuinely as a friend, as a good friend, but he can be a monster.
I only meet people so many people in passing, and so it's like very much it's like speed dating.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, hey, how you doing?
Yeah. Sure,
good to meet
sure.
you. Bye.
Like hey, Mike G, good going back you. To him.
Yeah.
But couldn't be a nicer guy.
Uh-huh.
And we actually ran into an issue recently where I had an idea for a TV show, something that I was not seeing in the world of TV shows.
Dump it here. All
right.
So
let me just say this about this. It's very enjoyable. The sugar, it tastes so sweet and so good, savory wise, like it tastes really good, that I worry about drinking too many and then the next day feeling like garbage.
So what I always say with that, you're going to have like about 2 ounces for a pour and top of a topo or maybe
A little topo on this would be
some
awesome.
Some ginger beer and ready to go. Oh.
There's a lot more vegetal notes on this.
On the nose, for sure.
That's the mint coming through. It was made to be that. It was made to be that Southside cocktail because when we had that event in one night, every bar had to make either a Southside or a Negroni.
Mm-hmm.
We raised, I'm trying to remember. I can't remember off the top of my head. I think it was like 80 grand we raised in one night. A bar had to make these cocktails and donate all the proceeds and all the tips from it to USBG. And then we funneled that out to all the members of USBG that applied for assistance.
Sure.
And so now
I had Bobby Cook, Robbie Cook, and Nathan Raffel on here talking about that. And they said that they'd meet a couple times a week and just approve. And there were all these displaced USBG guys guys, regardless of gender.
Right. Well, yeah.
2019.
I know. Jeez. You're going to get an angry
But they did. Review. I mean, there was like this community gathering that across the state that everyone helped each other out.
Like Austin had its own thing. Then we were trying to do a statewide thing. We were like, you know what? Let's just do, you know, the valley through like San Marcos.
Yeah.
So we got all them involved. Dallas did their own thing. But then that year, as we all remember, I mean, you had the hurricane that hit Florida. Then you had
Puerto Rico.
Yeah. Then you had the fires in California. It was like a, you know, an actual nightmare.
Yeah.
When it came down to anything else.
Let me give some feedback on this real quick. So I enjoyed the lemonade, but I think I enjoy the vegetal minty notes.
I like this one better.
It's about half and half that I've seen over the course of the year. And I mean, so if you're a bar and you're making cocktails, I mean, like you can just take this and add champagne to it and have a French 75. If you want to come.
I'm such a fan of vegetal notes, chartreuse and these like botanicals that just kind of get infused into spirits have such a well-received, almost kind of, I hate to say this, but it kind of reminds me, my wife's a massive hippie, you know, essential oils and every once in a while I find like
my wife wants to move to a farm.
Yeah, that's my wife. Yeah. My wife wants to move to Colorado.
She's like, oh, Chris, you can do this. I'm like, I can do what?
She wants to exist in the woods. And so every once in a while we'll find like a polished rock in the house. And I'm like, is this a crystal? Because if this is a crystal, I want a divorce. But we like the botanical citrusy notes. And this, the grapefruit smells incredible.
The grapefruit does smell incredible. It is very intense.
One of the funny things about these, how these were all developed, was like I would sit down with Trey, who's the owner, distiller, you know, lead bottler, all the funny things that you can think of. But I mean, he sits down and helps like replicate these products. But like, I would sit on one side of the bar and he'd be on the other, and I would just shake up, you know, a gin sour, or and then shake up 50 variations of a Southside. and we'd re-engineer it based on the cocktail we liked the best. And maybe like, you know, it was an eighth of an ounce more of lime juice and an eighth of an ounce less sugar. And that's what we looked at.
Yeah.
For the grapefruit, when we looked at this iteration of it, we always knew we wanted to do it. I just happened to walk on the way to go meet him. And I had some ideas and sketches in my mind of what I want it to taste like. And I'm sure he did as well. I walked out, though. I looked to my left over my neighbor's fence, and they had a white grapefruit tree. And I went, what? Ran around, broke into their yard,
stole
20 white grapefruits off.
Hit their kid, stole a grapefruit. Yeah.
But it's not something that, I mean, people really see anymore. Everyone's so enthralled with the ruby.
Mm-hmm.
The ruby is so sweet that it's very almost like – mono palate. I mean,
sure.
That's definitely not the right word for it, so don't beat me up on the internet.
No. Yeah, the internet can suck it. This is my show.
It has that one thing. So when you have these flavored vodkas and things like that, and also it's, you just taste sweetness and then ethanol alcohol.
Yeah.
The one thing that people don't understand with the white grapefruit was that it was the original grapefruit. Dr. Duncan created it to actually – it was made for cocktails. So when people try to make a gin cocktail from 100 years ago, they can't do it with a ruby. It has to be done with a white.
Sure.
And it's such a small demand now. And this shows the laziness of American culture because it has seeds.
Right.
It doesn't germinate as quickly. It's more expensive to create.
It's not as cost effective.
Yeah.
Which is the same discussion we had with Joe Heron from Copper and Kings when we were down there. He goes, we have all these ideas and we distill pears. We distilled, I think they tried strawberries once. Mm-hmm. It was a complete nightmare. But he said, they're not cost effective, but you're not really worried about cost. I mean, if you can make money on something and not lose money on something, well then
it's
a win. Right. Yeah. So we did two barrel picks of their Copper and Kings brandy, and I was lucky enough that they sent me a couple of the private casks that we picked. So we'll get to those in a second, but I love the era that we live in which brands, bars, there's a much – not only is there a higher educated consumer, not just HBS, but pretty much any group on Facebook has now definitely raised the bar for education of the average consumer. But bars, restaurants, distilleries, suppliers, all of them are making such more of a concerted effort towards not maximizing profits while still releasing something craft.
Oh, of course.
Right. So the fact that you guys would even go through and not take the short way out and do one grapefruit over the other is
It was very much looked at. And that's why people can't – like look at something as minuscule as like the Greyhound cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
People think that, it's just a simple one-on-one with vodka and grapefruit juice. Yeah. No. It was actually
– it
had to be, gin and it had to be white grapefruit juice. And the original recipe, it was created at where you think was a dog park.
Yeah.
So just imagine a bunch of pasty white dudes coming in from Long Island to go to the Greyhound track and lose all their money before they take the DC-3 back to LaGuardia the next day.
Yeah.
Well, so coming from one pasty white dude to the rest watching. Yeah. I'm
right there, man.
I have enjoyed the gin category quite a bit. When you simplify it, it may be oversimplification. A lot of gins are just essentially the original flavored vodka, but it's no different than it's an alcoholic tea, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically what it is. You're infusing
through
a concerted effort of, and I've said concerted effort quite a bit this episode. I always do that. Someone,
one word.
There needs to be a whiskey meat drinking game,
Nick,
where.
So when we did the Netflix thing, I kept saying zeitgeist. Like the things in the zeitgeist. and then last week, I think I did the episode and Nick listened on a flight to New York or something. He was like, how many times can you say vitriol just one good four syllable word just to beat to death in an episode. But concerted effort is this week's episode. Brought to you by the word Sesame Street.
I know. Yeah. You should do that. A little segment. Educate people on the English language.
I've really enjoyed the gin category quite a bit.
It's definitely blown up across the world.
Yeah.
And
I mean, when we were in Scotland.
With the cocktail resurgence that's happened over the past 20 years.
When we were in Scotland.
Boston, more so in Texas in the last 10.
Sure.
It's allow it to happen.
Well, the cocktail, like you said, cocktail resurgence, I think started the fundamental baseline. Like obviously gin mm-hmm. is such a part of so many cocktails. And honestly, I respect a gin cocktail over a vodka-based cocktail simply because sure. of the effort put behind it. You know, when you distill the vodka, legally speaking, you're supposed to be flavorless and odorless.
Well, did a lot of the
gin's the opposite.
Did a lot of the cocktails today, like the Greyhound, for instance, because I've seen uh-huh. I've seen recent recipes where they call for vodka instead of the gin. So have they have because of the American consumer maybe tastes changed? You know, in well, the mid 60s to the 90s, and it was all about vodka. Did a lot of those classic cocktails that previously used gin end up switching to vodka?
I mean, I look at two different marks in American history. I mean, well, actually, there's three. The entire 50s with like sure. the industrialization of the American kitchen being, you know, a big element
huge,
of that.
Yeah.
But then you also have OPEC.
I feel like he's like one sentence away from talking about how women.
Dude, I've said many times before, I miss the 1950s.
No. Trust me. You do not want that.
No, I don't.
My wife, she's a stay-at-home wife. And she wants – I mean, she would love to be outside because you get beat up by a three-year-old and a four-year-old oh, so
sure,
long day long.
Yeah. Sure.
You're hoping for that human
Your wife would love my wife.
I would hate –
We have four.
I try to stay home, and I can't do it. I want to go outside and hop in front of the trash truck.
When we first got – we've been together for – we're going on – we're in our 13th year. Mm-hmm. When we first got together, her parents raised seven kids at home. Oh, homeschool. Wow. So she's like, I want to be – that mom. I want to be the mom that takes care of my kids. I don't want to just send my kids off to some school and not spend those formative years with them. I said, okay, stay-at-home mom, let's do this. And we're now in deep into the stay-at-home mom thing. And she's like, I would just love a yoga class or I want to go to a brewery or like, okay, go, like go, yeah. go to a concert. She went to a concert last weekend with her sisters. I'm like, get out of the house. Like, I don't want you to cabin fever. I think I'm going to say something controversial for a second.
Ooh.
There's a comedian that talks about how being a mom is the hardest job in the world.
I know which one you're talking about.
Bill Burr. Exactly. Bill Burr. He's like, it's not the hardest job in the world if you can do it in your sweatpants. Like but it is I will. I'm not saying it's not. What I'm saying is it is a bit of a prison for women. And sure. I feel I sympathize for those that are – how much they're giving up. It's not so much that it's a hard job as much as it is a tedious, life-consuming, mentally robbing experience for years, especially if you have toddlers.
Sure. And I'm gonna go ahead.
There's the middle-class stay-at-home yeah. mom, though, and then there's the ladies who lunch stay-at-home mom.
Sure.
The ladies at lunch stay-at-home mom
That's
needs
a
to
different.
Her Range Rover needs to fall into the canal.
Right.
Sure.
It's so like small, you're not
My wife
doing
gives
it.
Her life up for our kids, and she spends so much time and I'm off doing this. I'm
sure.
Like, honey, it's a job. Yeah. She's like, you're drinking yeah, on camera. It's like, it's job. Not a job, you yeah. jerk. So. My wife's very supportive, but I sympathize for those who give up their life, their livelihood.
Yeah. I kind of can relate to that. You know, I was furloughed recently and was stuck at home for 3 weeks. And
I want to talk about this. We got to take a quick break. Let's yeah. take a. Well, we're going into our fourth segment. Let's take a quick break. But I want to talk a little bit about your experience at NASA
sure.
during this layoff.
Yeah,
I'm very supportive of very supportive of women, but I acknowledge that you're basically as a father, especially one that's. The breadwinner, yeah. so to speak. You're asking them to give up years of their life.
Oh, it's huge, yeah.
Especially during a time where they couldn't be more – as an adult, I'm fascinated in spirits. I'm fascinated in music. There's all these things that I'm enthralled with. You're asking them to give up basically their existence for like 3 years.
There's
years.
Like a negative connotation now associated with it too. And I mean, you know, it's easy to joke about with the comedians and everything. And honestly, obviously, and so I don't get internet hate mail, I was not at all equating my
no
3 weeks. Yeah, yeah, I was yeah. not at all oh, equating yeah. my 3 weeks of paid vacation time at all with being a stay-at-home mom sure. and raising kids. But, you know, I mean, I woke up every morning and made my wife coffee and fixed her lunch and everything. So, you know, there's that. But no, I mean –
I mean, I leave town to go sell booze
yeah.
for 3 to 4 days at a time, maybe try out fly to Nashville or
sure.
fly to Dallas and go do that and be able to do things like this. And I'll call her FaceTime, like, how's it going? And all I hear is a 4-year-old and a 3-year-old
just screaming,
just losing yeah. their minds in the background. She's like, what do you think's going on? I'm like, and bye.
Yeah.
yeah
so I have that ability to turn it off. Yeah. She does not.
But
so,
I mean,
thank you.
Yeah, I mean,
I love you.
As I said, I think
Happy
there's
Valentine's Day.
yeah.
Somewhat of a negative connotation that could be associated with when you're like, it's like, you know, you're out talking with people or whatever, and a woman asks, like, you know, well, what do you do? It's like, oh, I'm a stay at home mom. And everyone's like, oh, really? Like,
yeah.
You know, it's like,
there's actually a guy locally who There's a couple guys locally in the group. One guy in particular, and I don't want to mention his name just to so there's no perception of judgment, but he's a stay-at-home mom and he's
dad.
Stay-at-home dad, and he's big in the bourbon community here in Houston. And I applaud it, but there's this trope or this mentality when it comes to a dad who doesn't contribute, and it's so interesting the sociological how easy it is for us to just be like, oh, you're a piece of crap.
Yeah,
like,
you know. You're staying home. You're ooh, taking care of kids. You're raising kids. Yeah.
So this is made with meat.
Yeah. So exactly.
It smells like ham.
So this is a Clarin Vival. It's a Haitian rum made with sugarcane.
I love Clarin and I love Kate Perry. This smells like ham.
It's wild yeast fermentation. So you get
the mug pits.
A lot of funk. In there. Great. So have you had the Paranubas Oaxacan rum? Dude, it's actually good. Have you had the Paranubas Oaxacan
rum? I'm processing this. This smells like olive hams. Olives and hams.
What I would say is like one thing. Here, put it in that glass.
Let it breathe.
Well, yeah, you need to.
Man,
these
I think did we find something like that
I didn't like.
Wild fermentation. Listen, we'll create this nose that most people find.
I'm good. I've drank this before.
But like now, smell it now, and it's going to open up. It's going to poop pay out.
Hold on a second.
Oh, wow.
So I'm a very easy pleaser. Like I love all kinds of foods, all kinds of spirits. This is very upsetting.
No, hold on. But I'm going to try now. It's all about how a glass will make something. If we had like a specific glass, it's kind of like how, you know, read it like a tequila glass and then you'll have the Glencairn. You need something.
You're not allowed on the show anymore.
Body. Whoa, man. I broke Chris
on now.
It's 100% olives and meat. Jack, come here. You can come over here. Just smell it. You don't have to taste it.
I think I've seen that.
I should have
smell it. Just smell it. Smell it on camera so we can see your reaction. Olives and meat.
It is. It's very like
it's green olives, pepper, and dead ham.
You know,
tomato. Maybe
I'm glad that there is a video recording of this. Tomato. We can take like, so many snippets of this conversation.
Sure. Women are the worst.
This is totally worth it just to see you try this. I love sharing this bottle with you. It's not a flavor profile that I go for.
No, when
go
you first pulled that out, I was like, oh my God.
Where'd you get this from?
I wish I brought some sugar and some lime juice.
Yeah.
And
make a daiquiri
out of this. Listen, and it would be amazing and gorgeous.
So I had at Anvil, I had a tea punch, which is like one of my new favorite things, made with the Paranubas Oaxacan rum. And it's very similar. It's wild yeast fermentation.
The Paranubas, like where they're getting the sugar cane from, it's so close to like the citrus orchards. And
hopefully it tastes better. But like,
you know, the tropical citrus orchards. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have mangoes all around. You have pineapples. And it's really lending itself, the sugar cane from those orchards, into that product.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really
– Nope.
Nope? You don't like still?
Nope.
Wow.
Listen, I love you.
Hey, it's cool.
Holy cow.
It's not for everybody.
Yeah.
But it is for me.
So. And it's not a white rum, right?
It's not aged.
But it's not – the color hasn't been removed. Or that's it has.
Right. Yeah, you can actually see there's a bit of a tint to it and there's some floating.
So it's aged.
Yeah.
And they remove the color. Charcoal filter out the color. That's what a lot of white rums do is they remove.
I don't think it's filtered. You can see floaties, and there's a slight tint to it, so it might just be rested in a barrel. Like
it tastes better than it smells.
Okay,
and the taste does remind me of Jamaican funk.
A little bit,
a little Jamaica from Plantation, or you know.
I think I might have some bitters in here. That with some mango. Yeah.
I'll tell you right now,
like a spritz of lime,
salted meat, a little old tomatoes, not fresh tomatoes.
Yeah,
old tomatoes.
Slow it down, Mr. Burgundy.
Sweet Odin's Raven. It's that is not okay.
It's worth it just for that, just to see this.
It's kind of like a toe thing, like smells like someone's toes.
Let me
get something else in my glass. Listen, I pride myself on being diverse, but that is
let's move to let's wait for the let's do the Calvados.
Yeah, how about a Calvados?
I love the Calvados.
The Calvados will help like strip that flavor profile from out.
Oof.
So
I hope Katie doesn't see this or Kate doesn't see this. Because I've been fighting to get Habitation Valier here for a year and a half, and
that's not going to get out of that glass, by the way.
I'm gonna use it as a rinse.
It's like the stolen rum, same thing.
Yeah, stolen rum has that funk in it, that vegetal deathness to it.
I'm gonna use it
in a good way.
Or that plantation Haitian XO that NASA Liquor and Rosewater did too had some
yeah,
crazy some funk to it. It
as well.
The cool thing is, I mean, you know, every town in Texas, I mean, Texas is completely different, but every town in Texas has, like, you know, the chains and liquor stores like that. But
fantastic.
That liquor store is really something cool.
Which mm-hmm. one?
NASA one.
Liquor.
NASA's definitely done a lot of great things.
Yeah.
Done some bad things, but they've done a lot of great things.
I was surprised, like, how, I mean, when I first walked into it, it's kind of like Alamo City Liquor in San Antonio or, you know, Austin Wine Merchant. Every town kind of has it, and that's sure. one of them. It's like walking, like, oh, cool. Y'all have some really neat stuff. And it's affordable.
Mm-hmm.
It's very affordable.
Yeah. And, I mean, their rum selection is insane. I don't even – I walk past the whiskey part now, and I go straight to the rum yeah. and the brandy now because of how much stuff they have. But
like, the chains are great because yeah. they get all the stuff.
Sure.
And you can go there every day.
Yeah. When I'm having a party and I need to get, like, a big old thing of Evan Williams bonded to make sure. cocktails with or something
like
that.
I like Evan Williams bonded yeah. a lot.
Mm-hmm. So I'll go to a big box store and get that. But when I want something more unique, I usually go to
yep.
those little guys. So
I like this a lot. Did it give an age on it?
It's XO, so it's at
we'll
least...
tell you, I'm really glad I got the smell out of my glass.
So XO used to be 6, but I think they upped it to 10 now. At I mean, least yeah. with cognac, but this years. Is probably a couple years old, so it's probably at least 6.
That bottle right there, I mean, because it still has, it's still from Anchor.
Mm-hmm.
I remember correctly, that's 6-year-old distillate at least, but it's a mixture of like 8 to 10,
because mm-hmm.
they were getting ready for it this time for it to jump up. Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, I could be wrong. I usually am, but I think so.
Yeah, I'm a.
But it's delicious.
Oh yeah, I.
Christian Durin, Calvados is
really good.
Yeah,
yeah. And I've been trying more of that. You know, obviously Rosewater has a lot of that.
Sure.
Anvil did their. I think every January, starting a couple years ago, they did a brandy month in January, mm-hmm. and I'd go there and branch out and drink through a lot of that. And that's when I really fell in love.
There's
with Calvados.
If you can find it, I mean, go to NASA. I'm sure they'll do it, or go to Specs, and they'll definitely do it for you. Eric Borderlake.
I have a bottle.
That stuff. That 23-year-old. Yep. I would trade Bo, my son Beauregard, for like a week if I can get like a you know, a vat of that.
Yeah. Yeah, that stuff is incredible.
The this is got this bright old kind of cut down apple note to mm-hmm. it, right? Obviously being Calvados, it's apple based, but this is God, listen, I try not to use hyperbole too much. But that Clarin was rough.
Well,
this cost, I mean, the price that you're going to pay for something like this is so inexpensive for the quality.
Oh, yeah.
This should
100%
be,
inexpensive.
This yeah. should be like an everyday drinking for somebody.
Have
like,
you been on a Rosewater yet with Pasha?
No, never have. I need to. Oh, sounds like I definitely need to.
Yeah.
Him and 8 Row Flint are being this, they're doing this massive push towards expanding outside your comfort zone from mm-hmm. whiskeys and bourbons. And he does all these crazy old Calvados. The one that was recently was 75. No, 65 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
65 years old Calvados at cost. So you're pouring like $30 a pour or something.
That's something that definitely that Houston's been great at. And they
at
really
cost pours?
Foster.
Heck yeah, dude.
Mm-hmm. They really help foster that and stuff.
The that guy that's nice. Coming in to spend $30 for a pour at cost to try something that's 60 years old or 70 yeah. years old, the Madeira,
oh,
35
man.
Years
yeah.
old, it's $35 for 110-year-old Madeira.
Right. That's insane.
They're also buying other stuff at yep. regular cost.
Mm-hmm.
It's to appeal to the nerd. It's to get the right consumer in. You're really marketing your bar to the right people.
Yeah. Well, you are. I mean, if you look at this, that area where Rosewater is, you have all the NASA guys.
Yep.
And I mean, they're the ones that are going to try it. They're the ones that are doing the research. They're the ones that want to
experience. Oh, yeah.
Experiences.
We're definitely, we latch on to things. And
that was the beauty of working in a bar. And one of the few things I really do miss is that I was able to try everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it didn't matter if the bottle cost $8,000, I'd buy it. Mm-hmm. If the bottle cost $30, I'd buy it. I had access to anything and everything. And so I was always able to experience mm-hmm. these things that no one else could.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so now, like, even being 2 years removed from the bar, even though I spend a lot of time in retail, I'm doing my own product.
Right.
And I see all these fun things come out going,
and there's
oh,
been
man,
a ton of new stuff
I
that's
try
come
that.
Out.
Oh, yeah. I want to try that. Oh, I want to try that.
Yeah, it was cool too. Like, you know, obviously with Pasha with the NASA connection as well. He did some cool stuff during the furlough. He did some cheap thrills type stuff on the
cool.
menu and lower price cocktails that's and nice. Stuff like that. So that was nice.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
that's like looking out for your,
yeah.
your fellow man.
Unfortunately for me, I was kind of doing a dry January during that time frame, which actually was, yeah, it kind of worked out though, because I was actually super productive around the house since I wasn't like boozing.
Were you getting ready for the summer white?
As much. Yeah, you know, I dropped a couple pounds.
I'm getting ready for summer weight now.
Yeah. coming out of December, it was, yeah. you know.
After I got out of the Marines, never go back.
So you're a veteran.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was in the Marines for 8 years. It was fun.
The this massive push towards other spirits, which I've concerted that taken the stance that bourbon has kind of priced itself out of the category.
Totally.
You are pushing yourself towards these crazy old Calvados, these crazy old Armagnacs for half the price of a mediocre bourbon. And then you got bars in Houston like April Flint and Pasha at Rosewater that are just pushing for good spirits, period.
Yep.
Regardless of cost and age. And
the beauty of that, too,
what I love
is that,
about Houston so much.
Yeah, it's great.
If you develop amount of people drinking Calvados and then Armenian cognac and all right. this other stuff
Gross.
Out there.
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, it's amazing.
I bet it's good.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at like all the expats that end up like from Syria that end up going to Armenia and helping, it's for an entirely different podcast there.
Sure, sure.
But if we can get more people drinking all these funky spirits in the world that have homes in these little small villages and mass produce them and get those out in the world, it's going to drop the price of bourbon.
Sure. Sure.
So the more people that sit there and just like latch on to one product, it's like, you know, we're a bunch of mariners going on and killing all the dodos.
Right.
We're
right.
killing ourselves.
Yeah,
we don't even realize it.
Yeah.
But if we get everyone starts drinking these other fun things and experimenting, then we're going to have enough. I mean, wow, this is like I just Al Gore'd myself right now.
yeah. Invented the internet.
Yeah.
We're going to go for one extra segment past this if you guys have time.
Sure. Yeah.
I confirm with Jack. We're all good. We're going to do one extra segment. We're going to get into the brandies. I mean, we can start now, actually.
Sure.
Do we have any clean, empty glasses?
No. We got some official whiskey glasses over there. I don't even want to grab them.
Yeah, he's yeah. So let's do this. I don't know if those are clean or not.
Oh.
So let's do this.
These guys.
We're going to go one extra segment. But in the meantime, we're gonna wrap this up now. Thank you so much for coming on. For those of you who are on Facebook, and
thanks, Chris.
Yeah, no, just the Facebook portion. This is going to be four segments. Those were fantastic. This entire thing was fantastic. I definitely encourage you to and where you can specs, you can find Seersucker everywhere.
I forgot to like bring up one last thing.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Well, we've got one more segment. And,
It's
the funky thing. It's something stupid.
What's it called?
Tastes like chicken.
Yeah. Tastes like chicken vodka. Listen, that tastes like ham rum. So I'm okay for the taste like chicken vodka.
People that actually know things, they're like, you mean a pachuga vodka? I'm like, no, I didn't make a pachuga vodka. It's Americana, idiot.
Sure.
Everything tastes like chicken.
Yeah, you're right.
And so it tastes like fat white people. Ready? And we're gonna go, but you can find the remaining portion of this interview on iTunes, Google Play, all your podcast platforms. And in the meantime,
I don't know why I'm smelling it.
Smell it. You'll definitely get it.
Smells better than that ham. That was so offensive. I thought
there's Sotol and then there's like good Sotol.
Yeah.
Sure.
Like Bacanora. I mean, those good spirits. And now like when certain people come out and are trying to put it out and they're like trying to like tell people this is what it tastes like. I'm like, no, it's not what it still tastes like.
How long do we have for the segment? 15 or 20?
I'd say 15.
Okay, 15.
All right.
So we'll keep it to 15. Let's get in. What are we tasting now?
He's lining up himself a little whiskey.
Yeah, I'm sitting there like looking at like what I think how it's going to play out in flavor profile. Yeah.
Sure.
Just from like eyeballing it.
Do you know if this guy's based in Houston or based in San Antonio?
He's based in San Antonio.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I brought a couple other bottles. I brought a Carnmore, which is an independent Scotch bottling.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
I got it in Scotland last year. This is a 5-year
Auchan. Is this on your Macallan trip?
Yeah, we went to Macallan during that trip. So I have a funny story about that. So we were in Craigellachie.
Craigellachie.
Yeah. And there's a bar there, the Highland Inn, which is it's an awesome little bar. My wife and I were sitting there. Drinking, trying some different scotches. And this old man walked in, sat down at the bar, and the bartender just handed him a pint. So this guy is a regular.
Oh,
he sits down, takes a swig of his pint, sits down on the counter, and just like huffs. And he goes, I drove out to the new Macallan distillery today, and it was absolutely atrocious.
Oh yeah, I remember this.
The big walk did nothing for me. The roof was atrocious. You walk in, they have all the bottles over there, and everything's a repeat. And I literally just got done talking to the bartender about how we were out there.
How awesome it was.
So the bartender looks at me and goes, "Oh well, yeah, what did you think about it?" I'm like, "I mean, I thought it was pretty cool."
Well, okay, hold on. You're looking at it from from a different set of
eyes. Right.
He's looking at it from he's lived there his entire life.
Exactly.
And it's no longer, two and a half stories tall,
right,
built out of the same rocks that Rob Roy killed the English crown on.
Yeah. So it was so funny because then we had a lot of really great conversations after that, which is one of my favorite things about this hobby in general, and the fact, with the Bourbon Society, and the fact that you could just sit around, have some good stuff to drink, and just talk with people that you probably would have never met in the first place, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it really bothers me how within the industry, like you said, you've kind of kept quiet in the group. You don't want to be involved in any kind of controversy. Nathan Raphael came on and was talking about since he became a brand ambassador, he's had to tone down his politics because of
right.
it affects his job. There's this massive movement.
Let me hit on that. I love Nathan to death. I think he's one of the nicest guys in our industry. And I can't remember who it was. It started like picking on him the other day about how Grey Goose was made.
Oh, and Wade.
Oh, yeah. I was like,
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I was like, okay.
It was Wade.
I was like, okay. Well, I mean, good for you. I'm glad that you're going to share that and you're going to sit there and like talk bad about someone's job and business.
Sure.
Like, what if Nathan, picked apart his business?
Sure.
And
so Wade used to work for Garrison's, and he did. People would immediately reciprocate with shit talk about Garrison's.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then he was laid off from Garrison's. All the brand ambassadors, they went through some sort of shakeup or change. And then now he works for TXWA as the compliance officer for Texas Whiskey Association. Fantastic. Anyways, my point is that I think part of what's driving this massive growth are these honest conversations that happen. When we get together, we had arguably very controversial. Can I speak freely?
Yeah.
You sure?
Sure.
Let's do it.
So, I don't know where you're going with this.
I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
Well, the movement we've seen is this overwhelming honest conversation between people.
Yeah.
As friends, you have honest conversations. So you've got a passion for spirits, a passion for getting together, and a passion for honest conversation, which is different than what has been in the past where brands have had to muzzle themselves. And we went to Kentucky in December. Mike is actually in an interracial marriage.
Yes.
And we had an honest conversation over how you're going to be faced with all kinds of interesting questions or tropes, or not to say trope again, of navigating of what it's like to have to be in interracial marriage. And it was just this honest non-PC conversation, and we all walked away feeling
better,
closer.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I sell vodka. I mean, everyone knows I sell vodka. I mean, people that want to make fun of me say I sell flavored vodka. Okay, cool.
Sure.
I'm happy about that. The way I really look at the vodka industry is that when you're distilling to 190 proof, terroir is completely removed.
Sure.
Terroir is gone.
You're removing all the
You're leaving all the nuances. If we're making whiskey, that would be different. But you're making vodka.
Right.
And you're making distillate that's been so removed and stripped of flavor profile. Then you're adding stuff back into it.
Right.
And then,
agreed.
I mean, if you look at the history of gin, when ships would come back from the West Indies and East Indies, into Rotterdam or in the Netherlands, or in Plymouth, they would come off, they'd offload their bounties.
Yeah.
And they'd go into these drying warehouses. And normally what they would have to do is take those products and then put them into different distillates and, make them as compounds. And then they would go back and make gin at a later point. But for vodka, when people when Wade was busting chops on Nate.
About their distillation process,
So what? They're making it in Picardy and they're shipping it down.
Yeah.
What's the big deal? It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
And the only reason why, we touched on this a little bit earlier, those three different things that really changed the American consumer, industrialization of the American kitchen, OPEC, because that's when corn started being heavily planted for ethanol. Yeah. Then also the invasion of Afghanistan in 79. No one looks at that, but that's when you start seeing a disproportionate rise. Wheat goes down, corn goes up.
Hmm.
Russia, at the time the Soviet Union, dumps wheat and barley and rye onto Western Europe and drives down the American commodity price.
Oh, okay.
So to sustain itself, the Ag Bill in 81 heavily subsidized corn.
Yeah.
Now that's – and from then on
– And we're so entwined with that. Yeah. You can't even –
The obesity rate from then to now is entwined with that right there. Who thought by, you know, a
corn T-70 – Corn was that bad for you.
Yeah, T-72 coming across the border from Uzbekistan was going to, like, you know, help me get to a size 38 pant, what it did. And so, I mean, it's funny like how world politics –
It's so crazy.
– has changed.
Yeah. And then now you're so intertwined with those farm subsidies and everything like that. You couldn't even suggest
– Oh, if you do that
– You're never going to get
elected. I mean, we can say some bad things on here, but if we say, like, take away the corn subsidy.
Oh,
and,
done.
You know, all these different things for the farmers, we are now safe.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And I come from a heavy, you know, ag family background.
Yeah. Sure. Well, as a lot of people here in South Texas have to deal with, is that's a huge part of our existence, especially in high school, is ag. So, But going back to NASA, since we kind of skipped over that earlier.
That brandy.
Oh, did you? So you tried it? Have you tried?
I pretty much made my own fly. I started off with the cast strength version.
So they're all cast strength.
This is
okay.
Yeah.
This is so the Phoenix barrel they originally did was they took some old exhausted sherry barrels, broke them down, used them as kindling, and toasted some new barrels, which did impart like a smoky wine note to the barrels.
Oh yeah, they're all our cast.
And the Phoenix we did was pretty. I loved
really
it a lot.
Good.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really good.
This is a beer Phoenix barrel. So they took a barrel aged beer in it, then took that aged beer barrel.
It was a cherry stout, if I remember correctly, right?
Blended Craftwork American brandy using against the grain Bow and Luke and Brooklyn Brewery hand and sealed barrels polished in a new American oak barrel.
Yeah.
123 proof, just enough to take that edge off anything above that.
Not quite cast.
It's kind of become our thing with Copper and Kings. We started doing 123 proof on all of our expressions. This one here is their own distillate.
This like the color itself of that Morverde barrel.
Yeah.
I mean, it's coming off almost like, and I know this sounds negative, and it's not meant to sound negative, so don't take it that way. When a bartender doesn't understand that vermouth is supposed to be pumped and kept in the fridge or kept refrigerated.
It's like oxidized.
It's oxidized. It almost looks like oxidized wine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the cup what it reminds me of. So
sure.
I know that sounds bad.
Well, I mean, Madeira.
But yeah, Madeira, yeah, exactly.
What do they call those? A fortified wine? Basically, they're invincible.
You can't
break
them. This King's Estate, that's phenomenal. It reminds me of Earl Grey tea. That's the flavor that I get on that.
So going to the King's Estate. So Copper Kings has been historically sourced. This is the first time. And so they had planned this year the King's Estate release. Or actually, I think the name they came up with was Riding with the King.
Riding with the King or something, yeah.
And we got to go up there and we tasted through the allotment of barrels that they had planned to use for this national release.
Okay.
And got to pick our barrel first.
Cool.
And we picked a barrel that also just happened to be Joe's favorite barrel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's Joe Heron of Copper and Kings.
Yeah.
The barrel on the label.
So this is Muscat Brandy. Pure Muscat Brandy aged in a King Estate Grenache Syrah Mourvèdre barrel. And I don't know what any of that means, but I will tell you that
it's very delicious.
The nose on this is just...
It's a bunch of grapes.
Some Earl Grey when you say that.
Earl Grey definitely. Tea is what I get.
But there's kind of a sweet caramelized nut note to it.
Mm-hmm. It's like a pecan. It's like a chocolate nut.
Mm-hmm. Definitely nut.
It's a chocolate nut vanilla texture.
It's absolutely fantastic.
Good, I remember.
Yeah.
And which is good.
Tea brandy is exactly – now that you say the word tea, that's tea. It's very strong, like a black breakfast tea.
Yeah. It's awesome. They crush pretty much everything they do. I love almost all their products. Yeah. I mean, it's
– Well, the thing to remember is that even barrel, right? So
– yeah.
When you buy products from a company who sources products or does a ton of different things, if you don't like one thing, if you don't like stuffed bell peppers and Mexican food,
right.
And you say, I don't like Mexican food, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Let me show you this. This is called the cheese enchilada. Right. It'll change your life. Yeah. This is called the chimichanga. Like, you may not like one thing from a brand, but there's a phenomenal spectrum from them that even if you don't like this one thing, let me show you this, other thing. Or this other five things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's
we went up there,
saying, like certain like whiskey brands. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
You don't like that?
Yeah.
Then try this.
I don't like Wild Turkey 101. Yeah, but have you tried Russell's Reserve?
Right.
Nah, I don't like Wild Turkey 101. Yeah, so, but that's not what Russell's Reserve is.
Let's jump back to the very, very beginning of the conversation.
Your barrels. Brought up,
The barrels.
We never got the explanation. What was your goal with those?
Well, for one,
by the way, I know the answer.
$39.99 was whiskey.
That's freaking awesome.
So they were you brought it up how they were getting ready to do they were going to $10 per bottle. Mm-hmm. So my idea was okay, I want to lock it in this price. Yeah. If I buy five barrels, I'm going to do it this way. But I bought so many that we couldn't go through them enough. And at the time, we had a barrel age project.
They got kind of released out to the state.
We had 100 barrels at any one time aging a Solera Old Fashioned that we would constantly age it to. And we were picking different whiskeys.
For cocktails.
Yeah.
For cocktails. There were barrel age cocktail rotations.
Yeah. We had like 80 just Old Fashions. And they would go from a 20-liter barrel, and then we'd dump it into a 53-gallon ASB and create a Solera. And then we'd pull from there, and then we'd bottle it and then serve it. And we would... You know, it'd have the bitters added, all that fun stuff, except for the sugar. And that's where we were buying for that reason. But the reason why there were so much Russell's that had my name on it was I was trying all...
To get it onto the bar.
Onto the bar. And so there was so much $39.99 retail whiskey in the market that you're going to see what it was. Also, it helped get my name out there.
Your name got across the state. I mean, there were people in Dallas, people in Houston.
Well, yeah, like I was having all my friends in the bar call me and saying, like, really, Chris? You're just going to go ahead and pick all of our allotments? I'm like,
yeah.
Yes, and there's two Patron barrels, too. And there's also a Herradura barrel. And there's also, I think I had bought maybe 12 barrels that year. And I was fortunate enough to where we were going through so much product. It was a goal of mine to get every bartender onto a distillery trip. And then to where, you know, they pay for themselves to get out there, and they go visit the distilleries, and they were able to come back and then actually sell it, which they did, and it really panned out for everybody.
Sure, so win-win for everybody.
It was I mean, it worked out. The brands got their names out there. Russell's was made to be had for $39.99 for an extra probably 2 months because I bought so much.
Sure,
then it probably should have, but I mean, you can still find some of those bottles like floating around smaller retail. And it's fantastic when I see them.
So what the what do you call it? The not the layoff,
but furlough.
Furlough's over.
Yeah, it was over. It ended, I guess.
Is it starting on Friday?
It might. It looked like things were looking promising.
What do you have planned?
What do you want to say to Trump? He listens to the podcast.
Oh, I'm sure he does. Honestly, since I work for the government, I'm trying not to be.
Oh, yeah. Let's not go there.
Who cares? Lose your job.
Don't want you to be like the last.
What's frustrating to me is the pettiness.
I hear Searsucker's hiring.
Yeah. What's frustrating to me is the pettiness that ended up occurring. So, like, example, within the last 2 days, it looked like they were reaching a deal to provide $1.7 billion for what they're calling. What the Democrats are calling fencing, the Republicans are calling it the wall.
Sure.
And Mitch McConnell called it a border barrier. These are all synonyms.
Yes.
It doesn't matter.
They don't realize
but
that.
But it's like they're fighting over what we're calling it. And oh, by the way, it was like, I think like 83 miles of barriers. So I did like some math on 1.7 billion divided by like 83 miles.
But we already had 1,800 miles of barrier or wall or fencing or cotton bales.
Sure.
Whatever we want to call it. We already have that amount.
Was the price per mile.
What was the price per mile?
It's 1.7
billion divided by 83. I did the math. It's like.
That's not unheard of because with high. Okay, hear me out.
Hang on. I work. The entire federal budget for NASA in a given year is like around 18 to 19 billion. And we put shit in space.
Yeah.
We operate a space station. We have six people living up there all the time. We're launching probes out to Mars. We're building new spacecraft and new technologies. And.
Have you seen my new post hole digger? Have you seen it?
And you're building – you're putting some metal slats in the ground and you're telling me it's going to cost like $900,000
per mile. You're not building a great wall. This thing's going to fall down.
I understand that. I'm not disagreeing with you. What I'm saying is I distinctly remember in 2005 I was
going – I can't wait for the first guy to paraglide over it, by the way.
Right.
Sure. There's people who are there's people who are trebucheting over drugs.
Yeah.
But I remember 2005 when I was in college that the estimate for a mile of highway was $1 million per mile.
That's insane. Mm-hmm.
And so when I hear in 2019, over a decade and a half later, that it's $900,000 per mile for a wall, I think that's not.
I guess
knowing the government, how crazy they are, well, it's not. In my mind, I'm thinking it's not. But by the way, I have no feelings officially that I want to put on tape on whether left, right, middle, or sure.
Yeah.
I will say that I'm glad to see you back to work.
Thanks. I'm glad to be back.
I like how in this extra segment I tapped something that I think would be great in a. I want you to come back on the show.
I would love to come back.
Chris.
Rant for hours.
Thank you so much for
coming. Of course.
This is my favorite part of life. Kids are okay. Who gives a shit? but getting together over drinks and just talking about life is what I was kind of trying to underline. We took a trip to Kentucky in December. Five of us. Todd, Adrian.
Here, maybe do the math.
You.
I think that's right.
Brooke was there but with multiple personalities. So like seven people took a trip in December and we had.
It was awesome.
It was this honest, beautiful thing that happens every single time we go to Kentucky with a handful of people that have only known each other on Facebook. And we just get together, have drinks. We have honest conversation. And it always comes across more endearing and honest. Mm-hmm. And not – you don't make assumptions like you do on Facebook where it turns into a political thing. Or dude, we went in December.
Well, that's the problem is that you can't have an honest rebuttal and so much things are like taken back.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Like my company, what we like to do is like, you know, if you have an argument, you argue and then you argue against it. But then
– I say debate.
But then you stop.
Argue has negative connotations.
Well, I mean, you debate too. But then stop and then I take your position and then you take mine.
Sure.
And then you try to go back.
Yeah. I always call it playing devil's advocate. I think it's important to – I think – and let me just say this and then we have to go. I think it's important.
You need to try this before you go.
Well, yeah. Okay.
This 5-year-old.
It's really good.
I think it's really, really important to even if you are cemented in your beliefs, to pull apart and try to find as many loopholes in your belief system as possible in a discussion with a friend.
Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we have to be neighbors.
Yeah. And no matter what, either it's going to strengthen your argument or it's going to make you reevaluate your priorities. And I think that is the way things are supposed
to
be. That is how people grow, personal growth.
What is the definition of Congress? Is a coming together?
Coming together.
This we just enacted the, what, the 51st?
First inaugural Congress.
Of the 51st Congress of
Whiskey Neat. All right. I'm going to try this. We got to go. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I want to get you back on, man.
I would love to come back, Chris.
So great finally meeting you.
We can actually talk about NASA.
I know. More NASA next time.
Yeah.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.